Coming up on the show today, we wrap up our year-long series called Seven Best. This week, it's the seven best mobile device computing tips, so you want to stay tuned for that. Good news from Google, especially if you're interested in sharing large files using Gmail and Google Drive. Sally and I both have cool iPad apps as our picks of the week. And finally, some very important listener feedback about COPA. So stay tuned for all that and more. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 265 for Tuesday, December 4th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and we're very happy that you're joining us for another edition of a podcast where we talk about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And I don't do that alone. I am always, they're almost always joined by the beautiful, the lovely, the talented Sally Draper, straight from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. I'm happy to join you this morning, and welcome to Advent. Yeah. We decorated our church, and we decorated our home, and it's just feeling like the season is upon us.
Yes. You're doing are you still doing the collage a day picture challenge?
I am. It's my own personal picture challenge. I figured one picture a day was just not enough in this busy month. So I've been making a collage each day and blogging about it over on sallydraper.com. But we did more than a collage with our family decorating. We set up a camera to take a picture every 24 seconds for over 2 hours. And we made it kind of into a stop motion video. So that turned out to be a lot of fun.
I didn't see that. I have to look at that. But I heard it was pretty cool.
It's a hoot. So yeah, we had a good time with it.
You've got some characters in that family of yours.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm sure there's some characters in your family too. You'll have to share your photo a day with us as well.
Yeah, they kind of put the kibosh on sharing too much family stuff on the podcast. Sometimes I ignore that, but so I have to be sensitive to that. That was the same way when I was preaching as well. I could only get away with so much as using family illustrations. Mm-hmm. But that's what makes the show the show. We are real people, right, Sally?
I'm about as real as you get. Yep.
Me too. Yes. Speaking of real. One real thing that's going on in the technology world today is mobile computing and mobile devices in general. And I'm sure some of our listeners are going to be getting maybe some new mobile gadgets, you know, in their stocking over Christmas. And we thought that we would maybe close out what I've really enjoyed this year, our seven best list of, you know, whatever, you know, seven best items of some particular technology topic. And we're going to close it out in December with the seven best mobile device computing tips. So we got our heads together and we picked the brains of our Wells Tech listeners as well. And I think we've got a pretty good list, Sally.
Yep. And this is pretty focused on tablets and smartphones, I would say.
Laptop is mobile, we're probably pushing that off to the side and just saying tablets and smartphones are something smaller than something with an attached keyboard, probably. So,
very timely article. I got a kind of a frantic email just yesterday from a friend of mine saying, I'm looking for an Android device and it needs to be in this price range. And what do you recommend? You know, so not that we're necessarily recommending specific devices on this show, but I know it's on a lot of people's shopping list. The devices are out there and proliferating very strongly to all different age groups. And, you know, everybody has a different desire for what they want to do with their device as well.
Yeah, this is the one to get, in my opinion.
Is that it? That's the Galaxy?
The Galaxy S3, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I like it. I like the bigger screen because my eyes are not as good as they used to be. And that little iPhone screen was just a little too challenging for me.
Okay. Well, I'm an iPad girl, so that's where my recommendation falls.
But to each his own, right? So where are we going to start with our seven best list?
Well, I think number seven on the list would be those accessories, those extra things that you might want to add on to your mobile device. And Martin, between the two of us, we have a few accessories that that we like to recommend. It's funny because last week, I think you recommended your keyboard.
Right.
And I held mine up at the same time. It's been a pick of the week for me.
Yep.
And I think it's a pretty nice device. I actually have a story to share. I was stuck in Mankato needing to kill about 4 hours and really not having a whole lot to do, and ended up at the car dealership, whipped out my keyboard and wrote my Christmas newsletter right there at the car dealership on my iPad with my wireless keyboard. Yep. I then emailed it to Office Max and went over to Office Max and picked up copies of it.
So wow, what a testimonial.
It was a productive morning.
For mobile computing, yes.
And it was all because of my keyboard. I couldn't have typed that long letter on the screen, I don't think.
Yeah, and I'm using mine to do my blog post now with the keyboard and the iPad, and my pick of the week coming up too. I'm not going to spoil it now, but it really makes it a more functional device. I think some of those devices are really hard to get the hang of as far as typing on a soft keyboard. You don't have the touch feel, and you don't have actually some of the keys you need. And I think I mentioned this with my pick, the arrow keys are really a must-have on a keyboard, which I assume yours has too. Once you get that cursor going in your text, it's just a bummer to have to reach up and try and fish around and get that cursor in the right spot, either on iOS or on Android. It's just a real pain. But with the arrow keys on the keyboard, that makes it a lot more usable. And I think for a lot of reasons or for a lot of uses, it could replace a laptop probably a majority of the time that you need to take stuff on the road. So,
especially if you have one of these, which is an SD card reader. Now, some devices, like my husband has an Asus Transformer, he can put an SD card right into the device.
Right.
With the Apple devices, they don't have those SD card readers, and I'm not sure if your phone would have something like that. But
nope.
But you can buy an accessory that plugs into your device that allows you to read SD cards. Now, for me, that means I can get photos off my traditional camera into my iPad and do the Instagram thing on them because that's what I love to do. So,
right. Yeah,
the SD card reader is an excellent accessory that I would recommend.
Unfortunately, Apple charges an arm and a leg for some of these things, too. Here's the one that goes with the iPad. I guess we're calling it the iPad 4 these days. I think this was like $29 just for this little adapter that has the Thunderbolt or Lightning Bolt. I forget which is which here, adapter. So, but it is handy. I used it actually just last night where you can take your SD card. It has to be an SD card, not the CF cards or the even the micros, although you can probably use an adapter. And then it pops right up on the iPad and works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. I like the way that the end of that is mine doesn't work with my case on. So I have to actually take my case off to plug in the old end of the iPad connector.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Then one final accessory that you probably shouldn't be without, and this is all under number seven, so we have a long way to go here, Sally, is a battery charger. With devices, they obviously can suck a lot of juice, and if you're on the road, you don't want to be left with no juice in your phone or your tablet. And Mophie is a company that's made a lot of these over the years, and one that I've recommended in the past was the Mophie Juice Pack Power Station. And actually, I should have had that at the ready here so I could show everybody what it is. But it's basically the size of a deck of cards. You plug in the one end to a, kind of a USB input and the other end into your device. And it'll charge almost anything. And I think it'll charge an iPad, fully. It has enough juice to do that. And obviously a phone probably two or three times. So it's a good a good thing to have. And I want to say it was $70, something like that, maybe a little less.
We'll definitely have links to all of these in the show notes. I'll be typing for a while today.
Yep, so. Very good.
Moving on to number six.
Six, yeah.
And what that one's yours. You were going to talk a little bit about security with these mobile devices.
Yeah, security. Let me actually do a quick screen share for those of you watching at home. One of the things that I've recommended in the past is a product called Prey. And it is free, although there is a premium version, as most of these do now. But Prey is a little application. It's an online application, and it's also an application that gets installed on your devices. And this can work for a laptop, tablet, or phone. And it basically monitors your device. It allows you to remotely wipe it if it gets stolen. You can track it. So it, if you go to this website after your phone has gone missing, or you've left it in a cab or whatever, you can track it via the GPS in the phone. You can send a message to the phone. You can have it take a picture. You can just totally lock it down with a password so you don't actually have to wipe the whole thing. Just probably a no-brainer kind of a tool that you'd want on your mobile devices, especially if you have anything sensitive on them. And that's PreyProject.com. So I would say security is a real important thing as you're thinking about how to protect these devices that actually can walk away once in a while, especially because they're so portable.
We also want to make mention that Apple has their own version in the iCloud where you can do very similar things. So we'll have a link in the show notes to the Apple iCloud option as well.
Yep.
Number five on the list is something that works well if your device has a GPS in it. I guess not all devices do, but many, many do. And so you can have your device tell you where you're at and give you directions. Martin, you're familiar with that as well.
Oh, yeah. And the one that we've talked about in the past is Batch Geo. Batch Geo has a mobile version now, and that came in real handy when I was developing the Wells mobile app, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But Batch Geo allows you to upload data. And what we've done with the Wells mobile app is uploaded all of our congregations. And then if you go to that Batch Geo location, there's a link to it. You can actually do a search. It's mobile optimized, so you can scroll around and search for different cities or locations. You can do it by, I think you can do it even by address. And it figures out what the closest location is and will pop up a little item there that's mobile friendly as well, where you can, once you click on the address, it'll launch your map app on your phone or your navigation app, whichever your preference is, and you can get driving directions right to the location. So probably a good thing maybe to think about, especially for congregation schools developing their own mobile apps.
Yeah. And, you know, just being able to get that information in the Wells mobile app is a huge breakthrough. I'm really excited when we get to the Wells mobile app. It's coming up soon.
So. Yep. Very good. So maps is a big deal when you're talking about mobile, because that's one of the reasons that I have a smartphone with a GPS, that I use that all the time for the trips that I take and getting around, and just an invaluable tool. So.
Excellent. All right. Number four on the list is a category that many people make use of their smart devices, and that's productivity, being able to get more done and be more efficient with it. And we could probably spend a whole show just talking about mobile productivity. A couple of things I wanted to mention in relation to that is being able to sync my Google Calendar. And when I say Google Calendar, it sounds like a singular thing, but if anybody's a Google Calendar fan, you know, you can have multiple Google calendars.
Oh, yeah.
And so I definitely want to include a link in the show notes to the instructions for syncing your Google Calendar, because it's a little bit geeky. You have to go through and enable that. It works different on Android versus Apple devices. You can select which calendars you want it to sync. And when I say I have multiple, I would guess my list probably has 12 to 15 in it, just because of not just my personal calendars, but like I follow Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School's Google Calendar, and I follow the New Orleans Saints Google Calendar, and so on, you know. And so you go through and choose which ones you actually want to sync up with your mobile device. And then for me on my iPad, it comes through all color coded, just like that online Google Calendar experience. And anytime I change the calendar, it stays in sync with my online calendar. So it's a huge productivity tool for me.
Yep. Calendar is a big deal. Plus, you know, a lot of congregations who are going to Google Calendar have different calendars set up for different groups too.
Right.
So the choir calendar, the usher schedule, or, flower altar guild, whatever. So.
One more productivity one that I've made use of this year and I wanted to make mention of is something called Focus Time, and it uses the Pomodoro concept. That's a productivity concept where you focus for 25-minute slots where you don't allow any distractions, and this is basically a timer, and when your 25 minutes is up, it times a nice 5-minute break for you, and after you complete 4 of those, then you get a 20-minute break. So it's just when I've had to push through some really tight projects and I needed to be really focused, this was a great tool. I could rely on my iPad to ring a bell for me to take a break and, you know, then turn right back around and get involved again. So cool. I like the Pomodoro concept for productivity, and my mobile device helps me with that.
I looked at that. I think that would just stress me out more, knowing that I have to stop and then come back and pick up my train of thought.
Yeah. But, everybody's different.
I know. Absolutely. That looks like a cool app, though. It looks like it's well-designed and really functional. Mm-hmm. Probably a good time. I wanted to talk between now number 4 and number 3, because number 3 is kind of similar. For those of you trying to make a case for a smartphone or a tablet in ministry, I think it's getting easier and easier to have that conversation, especially those people in ministry that do any traveling. And I know pastors do a lot of traveling, especially where they're making hospital visits or shut-in calls or whatever. And sometimes there's just time where you have downtime or time where you want to be productive, but you're not in front of your home computer. That's where I think tablets and smartphones really can be a blessing, where you can answer email and take notes for, the upcoming sermon or Bible class or all those things are possible with some of these apps that we're talking about. So it's not a real stretch to say that a smartphone or a mobile device of some sort is a ministry tool that is really something that's going to make you far more productive. So which leads us into number 3, which is one of the reasons that a lot of people do have these mobile devices, is note-taking, where you can always have your note-taking device with you, where you can either take notes or read notes or refer to notes. And there are a lot of good tools on the note-taking side. One that was referenced by one of our listeners, I think, did Jason Schmidt talk about this
yes.
one?
Mm-hmm.
Evernote, and we've talked about this on the show in the past. Evernote is just kind of an everywhere note-taking tool. Whatever device you have or computer, Evernote is available on that platform, where it takes all kinds of raw notes. You can embed photos, videos, audio files. It can record audio. It works on a tag-based system or a folder-based system, so it's easy to organize. It's all stored in the cloud and on a local device, so you can sync certain pieces of material, either all of it or some of it, so that you don't even have to be online to take advantage of it. So, and Evernote, for a lot of functionality, is free. For a lot more functionality, there's a small annual cost for that. So Evernote is really something that almost everybody could probably find a use for.
Another one that I make use of is called Notability.
Yep.
And I think it's iPad only, if I'm not mistaken, but it allows you to do a lot of the same kind of things. As you're taking notes, you can include images, you can type in there, you can write in there, write on it with your stylus directly. So you just have handwritten notes. It will export in a lot of different formats and include audio and video. There's a lot you can do with Notability. So that's become my organization tool just on my iPad, where I want to have certain notes stored.
Now, can you get the notes from there onto your computer, for instance?
You can. You can export in PDF format and others, and then email it to yourself or sync with the Dropbox or whatever.
Cool. Very good.
Yep. Yep.
Speaking of syncing, that's number two, Sally. And number two is cloud services, and specifically cloud services for file synchronization. And you got a ton of options here. Device manufacturers and mobile operating system developers have recognized the need that, hey, you want to share this stuff. It can't be locked into your device. You want it. You want it available wherever you are, and it needs to be in the cloud. So a number of things are available here. One of them is a tool that probably everybody's heard of called Dropbox. Dropbox is available on many devices and also on your desktop and laptop machines. Just that in the cloud storage where you can throw stuff up there. I think you start with these. Is it 2 gigs or is it 5 mm-hmm. gigs now? I think it's maybe two gigs. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Sally, what do you use?
I do use Dropbox a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I also access my mobile Google Drive. So I can get into anything that I've stored on my Google Drive account as well. So between those two, that gives me plenty of storage.
Yep. And then two others from our friends at Apple and Microsoft. Apple has something called iCloud, which I'm not sure is as flexible as maybe Dropbox or Google Drive is. You're kind of locked into, you have to own an Apple device basically to use these products very effectively. And then Microsoft has something called SkyDrive, which we've talked about in the past as well, which will work across all platforms as well, and they've made some nice enhancements. One of the nice things about SkyDrive is that you can use some web apps for those. So you can open up the Word doc or the Excel document or the PowerPoint right on the web. You don't even need the application if you're using SkyDrive. So lots of options there.
One more that probably doesn't have a category, Martin, something we really forgot about, was being able to get to your local computer from your mobile device. So not really syncing, but actually accessing your local computer. And the tool that I use for that is called Splashtop Streamer. And it just brings up, as long as my computer is running the utility, then it brings up my computer and then it can interact with my files directly on my local computer from wherever I am. And there are other ways to do that. I know TeamViewer has
TeamViewer is what we use in the Senate office. Yeah, there's an iPad version of TeamViewer. There's an Android version of TeamViewer. Mm-hmm. So, as you say, as long as it's the software is installed on the stationary device, so it doesn't necessarily need to be stationary. It can be a notebook computer as well. But as long as that software is installed, you can get at it and basically view the screen and operate it as if you were sitting in front of it. So
that's kind of a morph. Maybe that's a one and a half there.
Okay.
But now it's time to get to number one. We save the best for last. Number one is Bible apps on your mobile device.
Right. And the one that we're going to recommend and say that everybody needs to have, of course, is the new Wells mobile app. And this is something I've been working on for probably more hours than I should have. I kind of cut my teeth on mobile development on this app. And I guess it's still a little rough around the edges. We're just about ready to launch it, but you can get to this app in a couple of different ways. I decided that kind of the direction that mobile apps were going is kind of a web version first, so that you can go to this in any mobile browser. And so that's what I created first and then built off the other apps, the iOS and the Android and Windows and BlackBerry apps off of this. But we've talked about this on the show before, but it's simply an app that provides Wells content. So you've got written content, audio and video content. We have Wells Radio. We have call reports. We have our links to our social sites. We have the blogs. One feature that I was kind of excited to get working was the locator area, where you can actually go in and search for a location of one of our churches. I'll add schools and other things later, but you can search by city or state, or you can search near you. So if you're out and about and, let's say, on vacation and want to find the nearest Wells church, you can use that function, and it'll show you the churches that are closest to you. So m.wells.net is the place to go to get the mobile version. The Android, as we speak, the Android version is also available. iOS version is in the works. I've submitted it. We're just waiting for Apple to say, yeah, you know, we'll bless it. And you can actually let people get at it at this point. Windows Phone, the same way. I've submitted that. I'm just waiting for Microsoft to say, you're good to go. They all work the same way. So the mobile app on the web, as well as the app that you would download to your specific device, work exactly the same way. So you don't have to wait to take advantage of it, m.wells.net. You can also go to wells.net/mobile to read more about the features and functionality and get links to the apps themselves on the different devices.
So I just browsed to it on my iPad, that m.wells.net. And then in the iPad, you can add a link to your home screen. So I put and it made a little icon. So it looks like an app on my home screen, and it just brings up that browser version of it.
Right.
And so I technically have an iPad app already because of that nice little icon it created.
Yeah, I was just reading an article on Mashable this morning, actually, that was comparing where app developers are going as far as creating native apps or creating the just the web apps. And the direction actually is going toward, you know, the web app side because it's cross-platform and they really only have to develop it once. And as long as you have an internet connection, you're good. So.
And you were nice enough to do an overview video for us, Martin. So we're going to have a YouTube video if you guys want to go out and take a tour of the Wells mobile environment. You can listen and learn as Martin shares it with you. We'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yep. But there are other mobile apps that you may want to consider putting on your phone or getting on your phone to both learn and be inspired by God's word, but also share it. And one that I use and have been really happy with lately with some of the improvements they've made to their mobile version is Lugus. That's the one that I open up during Bible class now because you can do word studies on the Greek or the Hebrew words. You can do comparisons between versions. You can read commentaries. That comes in real handy when you're digging into God's word. So the Lugus mobile app is real good for that. We've also talked about YouVersion before on the show, which is a great app, very functional. You have lots of different versions you have access to. You can take notes. You can create bookmarks. You can do sharing right from that app. And the final one, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, and they have great reading plans, including from our friends at Time of Grace. So if you use the YouVersion app, you can even get some Time of Grace reading plans through YouVersion.
Yep. And one more app that you may want to consider getting on your device is the Glow Bible. That gives you a little bit richer experience. You've got maps and some multimedia content that you can view. Now, I believe this is iOS only. I don't think there's an Android version yet. So it's just iPad. I'm not even sure if there's one for the iPhone just because of the visually rich nature of the content they've got. But I know there is an iPad app that it's really well done.
Yeah, and then it syncs across to your Glow account on your computer. So if you buy the premium version, then it will sync to that. And Martin, I'm just looking at their website, and they do. I remember not too long ago that they announced they do have an iPhone version. No Android version at this point, but there is an iPhone version and a Mac version.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
And it's very inexpensive. They were running a special the other day, like $29 for the boxed version. I don't know if that's still going on or not.
But you can get a light version that is free. So mm-hmm. you can get the app regardless of whether you have the pay for version or not.
So good. Reason enough to get probably some kind of mobile device just to bring that with you. Mm-hmm. So that, Sally, is our 7 best mobile device computing tips. Hopefully that was helpful to everybody. And I'm kind of sad. This is our last 7 best.
Alas, it isn't.
Oh, it's not.
Imagine that. We have breaking news. We're going to do one more 7 best list, and it's going to kick off the new year. Instead of our traditional countdown of best and worst picks of the year, we're going to have a 7 best list, just to kind of cap off our seven best
picks, right?
So right, and that'll be right on January 1st on New Year's Day, so you'll want to mark your calendar and tune in to hear those best picks of the year.
So Sally and I are going to tear ourselves away from family gatherings and, you know, the holiday and
podcast comes first.
Yes. Actually, I think we'll probably re-record or pre-record. Yeah. All right. What else do we have? Are we done with our countdown, Sally?
I think that will do it. We've probably taken enough time for that. We should move on to news and tech.
Yes.
Yep. Please. And I found a CNET article that I thought was worthy of sharing. It's a pretty short article, but a big announcement from Google. They are good at making those announcements. Mm-hmm. Gmail is now linked to your Google Drive account. And the big deal is that that means you can do some really large email-based file transfers, up to 10 gig file transfers via your Gmail account. So when you're addressing an email, you have a special link there that allows you to insert files from your Drive account directly instead of just a file attachment on your local computer. You can go to Drive, grab a file, and like I said, it can be up to 10 gig, and they'll transfer it via email. So nice linkage.
I think I can imagine that there are issues or there are concerns from, you know, vendors like YouSendIt and those kinds of vendors that do exactly what this is doing. And I think there is there's probably a big need as files get larger. And this just makes it simple. You just click a button, you know, make sure it's on your Google Drive, and away it goes. So.
Mm-hmm. I've been working with my kids on various projects and helping them, you know, create presentations with embedded video. I mean, it adds up quickly when you do that kind of thing and have just a little bit of video, even your file sizes get quite large quickly.
Yep. Shall we move on to our picks of the week, Sally?
We should. And believe it or not, they're going to be iPad-centric picks. I should keep mm-hmm. sharing my window here. I think I shared the wrong one, though. My pick of the week is actually an app that I've made use of for easy transfer. And we talked about having a little device to plug into your mobile device for using SD cards. But this allows you to transfer photo and video without having to sync an iPad through the iTunes store. And this can be either way. These can be files transferred from your local computer to the iPad or from the iPad down to your local computer. I know I made a use of this when I was doing a project at the after prom party this spring for MVL. I was taking a lot of pictures with my iPad and I wanted to print them on a local computer. And so I used this file transfer app, and the way it works is you have to be on the same wireless network. So your iPad and your computer have to be on the same wireless network. You go to a certain website on the computer, and it's basically an IP address that they give you. And then this app comes up on the computer, and you can choose whether you want to receive files or transfer files from the computer. You do similar functionality. You open the app and choose which files if you want to transfer down from the iPad, and push a button, and the transfer occurs over the wireless network. And it has been a real lifesaver for me and a real time saver for me, rather than going through that whole process of syncing through iTunes, which is a little complex, in my opinion. I've really enjoyed this transfer app. It costs $3, but for me, those were dollars well spent and avoided some headaches. The other thing that I found, and this was just a nice, we call it Lanyap, a little something extra with the app, is that I can choose to transfer directly into what's called the camera roll on my iPad. And that's kind of a privileged area. It's a locked up area in general on the iPad. If I take things out of the camera roll, I typically can't get things back into the camera roll. It's an all or nothing kind of place with Apple's locking technology.
Right.
But with this, you can choose to transfer right into that camera roll, and wouldn't be a big deal normally, but another app that I like to use is iMovie to create movies on my iPad. And if I take a movie that I've shot on my iPad off the iPad, I can't get it back into the camera roll. And that's the only place iMovie will look for movies. And so being able to put things back in the camera roll with this app saved me a lot of hassle with my movies. I know that's kind of complex. But
so if it doesn't go in your camera roll, do you have other places on the iPad you can put it?
Right. You can set up albums on the iPad, and you can do that from within this app, or you can do that through iTunes by creating directories in the folder that you sync.
Gotcha.
But this allows you to create those albums, but it also and you know, you can get in and out of those albums easily enough, even through iTunes, but you can't get back into that camera roll. But this app allows you to do that.
Okay. So. Cool.
Yeah, it was a frustration, and I was happy to find a resolution to it. So,
all right. Super. Like
your turn.
Okay. As you mentioned, Sally, mine is also a iPad-only pick. And I had mentioned this before when we were talking about keyboards for the iPad, that I've been now writing some blog posts using the iPad itself and the keyboard, and somewhat of a challenge to find a good tool to work with WordPress. And I finally found one that I'm really happy with, and it's called Blogsy, B-L-O-G-S-Y, Blogsy for iPad. Get in the App Store. It is basically an interface that allows you to easily add content from all different sources. So you can add content from Facebook, from Instagram, from Picasa, from Flickr, from Vimeo, all those kinds of things. You can link to all those, of course, as well. You can add pictures, video, etc. And it's just a nice, it's an elegantly done design, you know, designed well for all kinds of blogging platforms. So it's not just WordPress. You could post to, if you have Drupal or Typepad or Blogger or Posterous or Joomla, any of those things, it will, or Squarespace, it will allow you to link to those accounts. It will show you how it's going to look in those accounts, and then allow you to create drafts and then publish. You can actually delay publishing. One really nice thing about this particular app is they've got some great video tutorials. So if you're curious about how to do something, they probably have a video there that will walk you through the steps necessary to do it. And I just found it a really excellently done app and just the best one out there. There is a native WordPress app for iPad that I don't think works very well, but Blogsy seems to have ironed out all the issues that that WordPress app was having, and just a must-have if you do any kind of mobile blogging.
Yeah, I haven't tried Blogsy lately. That's an app I purchased quite a while ago, and I haven't made use of because I had certain challenges. I think the big challenge and hurdle that they all had to get over was the HTML editor kind of functionality. Yep. It looks like Blogsy is pretty WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. So,
right.
And I know the WordPress app isn't. You have to actually embed
That's a bummer.
Manual HTML to add links, for instance, or whatever. So that looks like a great interface.
Yep. So, and I believe it's not free, but it's not real expensive either. It's under $5. So if you do any kind of mobile blogging, and that's probably a good use for an iPad or another device, a keyboard and Blogsy is really a necessary combination.
Excellent.
Shall we move right along to a little piece of information we want to share about an upcoming concert?
Right. Coming up this weekend, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary will be presenting their Christmas concert, not once, but twice on Sunday. It is December 9th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find that on the Wells website. If you want to tune in to the live concert, go to Streams Media and then click Live Schedule, and you'll find a link to the WLS Christmas concert. It's called Sing a Song of Christmas. It will be occurring at 3 and 7 p.m. Central Time, again, this Sunday, December 9th. So check out the Wells website, click to view, and enjoy the music.
Beautiful. And that is a great concert. I've been to that in the past. Unfortunately, next weekend or this coming weekend, I'm going to be up in your neck of the woods, Sally. We're going to New Ulm for the weekend. So.
Unfortunately.
I didn't say unfortunately, did I?
I think.
Well, unfortunately, because I can't go to this concert, but I'm going to go to MLC's concert.
Awesome.
And which is probably streamed. That's probably streamed as well. We probably should mention that. If you go to MLC's site, go to their MLC, what do they call it? MLC TV.
Yes, it's right on their homepage.
Watch that. I think there's one on Saturday, which is the one we're going to, and then one also on Sunday afternoon. So
excellent.
So you're not going to make it snow while I'm there, are you, Sally?
No snow in the forecast. Now, a little bit cooler than it's been. I think we were in the 60s yesterday, and it's supposed to cool off a bit. Okay. But yeah.
Very good. Well, we're looking forward to seeing our daughter who's up there and singing in that concert. So awesome. Should we move along to our community feedback?
We should. And right off the bat, I want to make mention of a new addition to the Wells Tech Wiki. Teacher Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, was generous enough to share with us the finalized version of their tech usage guidelines for their staff. Now, this is not the AUP kind of thing that you're used to with students and parents signing off on what's acceptable, but this is more the staff agreement as to what is acceptable use of the equipment and the internet connection and all of that. And I think this is an important topic that school and potentially church staff need to consider as more and more our online worlds and our work worlds and our personal worlds collide. And I think they did a great job with this guidelines that they put together. And if you want to check it out and download a copy, you can do that from the Wells Tech Wiki. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Yeah, and this would just be a good time to encourage everybody that has these kinds of materials that they've developed or that they've found elsewhere that they're now putting in use and have found to be useful. Please share those because we'd love to share with everybody else. I get a lot of these types of requests for these different policies and both for this kind of stuff, for the acceptable use policies, for, you know, taking photos of kids, you know, any kind of policies that you have like that, please share those with us and we'll put them up on that wiki where we direct people that they can download them and then repurpose them however they want. Just good general resources there. So please share with us.
Absolutely. Next up, we had an interesting email from, I believe it's Principal Mike Marquardt
fifth grade in music.
All right.
He's at the school that we belong to.
Peace in Hartford, Wisconsin. And Mike had listened to our show last week where we talked about iPads and one-to-one computing in education. And he wrote in with a little bit of a concern, a different angle that we hadn't really discussed. Right. And that's with COPPA guidelines. And Martin, maybe you want to explain a little about COPPA?
Well, COPPA is a... It's a law basically that limits or restricts or guides, not even just guides, but says this is how you have to deal with the privacy of your kids and getting parental permission to different things related to the children in the school. So it's protecting the children basically. And one
those
of the
that
things,
are 13 and under, right?
Right.
Or
right.
Under 13, I
it
should
only
say.
Applies if you to 13 and under, right. And that's one of the reasons laws like this are one of the reasons that things like Facebook and, you know, those kinds of tools aren't available to kids under 13, because a lot of the things that they would try and do on, let's say, a social network would be in violation of COPPA guidelines or COPPA laws. Right. So this is really something that's been around probably, I don't know when COPPA came into being, I'd have to Wikipedia, but it's been around quite a while. Mm-hmm. And every school or school administrator needs to be aware of COPPA laws and make sure that they're abiding by them, especially when it comes to digital digital activity. And that was Mike's point in his email.
Right. One of the things he specifically referenced was Dropbox, one of our favorite solutions for file sharing. And many teachers, I think the guys we interviewed last week, talked about using Dropbox for the students to upload their assignments or to give them links to things for them to download. And I did have one suggestion for Mike. Let me see if I can share my screen. And that was to use a service called Drop It To Me. And if you use this, then only the teacher really needs a Dropbox account. You wouldn't need the students to sign up for Dropbox accounts, because that would be a violation of COPPA if they were under age 13. So
without parental permission.
Correct.
Some sites do that, and it's kind of a very complicated process to do that. But many sites say if you're not 13 or over 13, you can't, because we can't verify parental permission.
Right. With Drop It To Me, though, with the one teacher account, you can set up a link for the students to use. So, for instance, I have a link called dropittome.me/WellsTechTrainer. And when you go there, you'll be prompted for a password. And when you put that in, then you can upload files to that particular Dropbox account. So the students aren't uploading files to their own personal accounts, but directly to your Dropbox account. And then you have a particular folder in your Dropbox where you can look for those files. So right. That would be a way where the students wouldn't be required to have a Dropbox at all. The other option would be to use a service like Edmodo or Schoology, an online student management, course management system, and file uploads and things like that are allowed through that. Certainly through a Google Apps account on your local servers, students would be able to make use of that as well. So lots of possibilities there that don't require them to share. But, you know, I think a lot of times we just need to be made aware and to watch for these kind of pitfalls, because maybe teachers have the best intentions and aren't really up on COPPA and, you know, just have the kids sign off on an agreement that really isn't something they should be doing.
Yeah, because they're in violation typically if they're not. And sometimes they don't even read the fine print that says you have to, by agreeing to this, you're saying that you're 13 years or older. And so obviously we want to encourage our kids to not lie about that and to practice good Christian ethics, you know, online as well as off. So that's a great point Mike raises, and hopefully the listeners of the podcast will kind of recognize where we might have some issues and look for some alternate solutions. And we've just mentioned a number of them; they're probably very viable.
Yep. Next up, we heard from Pastor Rob Gunther, who's in Kenai, Alaska. And by the way, we are pronouncing Gunther correctly for those of you that were curious. We passed the test and he's given us the seal of approval. So thanks for that. Pastor Gunther also was following up on the iPads for Education show and had a couple of interesting things to share with us. First up, he shared a link to a really fun app. And yes, I had to go install it. I'm not sure if it was free. I think it is free. But it's called Piano Duster. And it actually works a lot like the Guitar Hero kind of apps, where there are notes dropping down and you have to hit the piano key at exactly the right time to coincide with the notes that are falling down. But what's unique about this is you can actually take it and sit it at your real piano, and the microphone on your device will pick up the piano playing and indicate whether you've hit the notes at the correct time and the correct notes and things like that. So I thought it was pretty cool. There were a lot of really good reviews for it from piano teachers making use of it. So you can play it on an on-screen piano if you want, or you can take it to your live real acoustic piano and play it there. So pretty neat app. He said his son is a big fan. He also reminded
us. Do you have a screenshot of that, Sally? Because you're sharing the wrong screen.
Great. I did a lot of screen sharing there. Showing you all
I
kinds of things.
I assume you had it. Yep, there it is.
Thanks for telling me. All right. So there you can see the Piano Duster app, where you can either play on the keyboard and see the notes falling and hit the keys at the right time, or you can play on your live piano, and it will pick up the notes that you play from there.
That is an awesome use of technology, I have to say. That's very, very creative. And
I thought it was
too. Very useful. I like it.
And they give you some free songs, but I think the app is free now that I remember, but you have to pay for additional songs. But there were practices for scales, and it judges your rhythm, whether you're in sync with the rhythm of the music. And you can practice it without background music, or you can add some background filler kind of music to go along with what you're playing. So pretty cool stuff.
Awesome.
Pastor Gunther also reminded us that we had in the past talked about this page, which is an iPad resource page from TCEA. And I'm afraid I don't even know what that acronym stands for. They put together this awesome resource where they have all kinds of different apps based on different subjects and needs in the classroom. ABCs, phonics, reading practice, literature for high school. It goes on and on. There are mathematics apps, science apps, social studies apps, and links to all those different apps. And I think this is a great way if you're looking for some niche need to fill with your iPad, this would be a good way to do it.
Texas Computer Education Association.
Awesome.
Part of ISTE. So.
Okay. And so check out that link. We'll have that in the show notes. And then finally, he stumped us a little with a question. He said, how can I manage these iPads? How can I know what the kids are doing on the iPad? And I did a little research, and that is a challenge with iPads. Other devices, perhaps you could have some management software, but that is not really something that exists on the iPad. There are some tricks. You can double click the home button and see the applications that have been running recently on the iPad. Mm-hmm. So you can see, you know, perhaps what apps they've accessed. But as far as telling how much time, he referenced the Wii. You can do that on the Wii. You can see how much time each user spent in a particular game or whatever. And that kind of thing just doesn't exist with the iPad. So trade-off there.
So maybe if somebody out there has a technique for this, who knows? We're definitely not the de facto Apple experts, but this is something that I think Apple wants to get more mainstream into the educational space with iPads. They've got to figure out management a little bit better. I know they've made some strides, but this is one area that obviously they need to take a look at, and maybe they are.
Okay. Next up, we had some users share DIGO links. First, we heard from Tom Rosenau out in Pigeon, Michigan. He's a principal in Pigeon, and he shared a couple of links. One was for turning your photos into music videos on iOS, and it's showing some different apps that you can use on your iPhone to do that. So if you're looking to do that, there's some recommendations in that article. And then the other is called a site called Outline Maps. And Tom says it's handy if you're working on U.S. regional maps. And with Outline Maps, you get outline maps. And you can pick state maps. You can pick, and they're all in this nice printable format. So, like, here's a Northeast regional map, which has Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and so on north. So, great for geography class and a resource I think many teachers might want to bookmark.
And all free and downloadable.
Definitely.
Cool.
Next up, we heard from Jason Schmidt a couple of links related to royalty-free music. One was called Purple Planet and another royalty-free music free. So check out those links if you're looking for some royalty-free music. And then on the iPad side, he shared a page, and I thought I had the link up. Let me try one more time. And it says the website is offline. So unfortunately, we can't bring that up right now, but I really like this page. That's why I was excited to share it. It was called iPad As, and you'll have to, we'll try again and we'll put a link up if we can get that to work. But it was education centric, but it was, if you want to use your iPad as a podcasting device, if you want to use your iPad as a research device, and so on. And then it would have a list of recommended apps, and they actually ranked the apps and gave you a little bit of a reasoning as to what they might be good for and when you might make use of them. And so not just a plain old list of apps, but actually some thought going into why and how you might use them in a classroom setting and to fulfill the particular needs. And they had some really good needs listed there as well. So hopefully that site will come back online.
I just got it up. Let me share my screen quickly.
Awesome. So yeah, if you scroll down the page just a little, there's a list of iPad learning objectives.
Oh yeah, look at that.
And then you can jump down the page to any of those.
I want my students to record and edit video on the iPad, edit audio on the iPad.
And then if you notice, there's, like I said, a rating there and a little bit of a justification or description and yeah, notes.
Easy,
area.
Medium, hard, sure. All kinds of different apps they could use and how to use them, links. Even have videos embedded. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, I thought this was a great find.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leave it to Jason to find great things for us.
Thanks, Jason.
The last one that he shared was something called Doctopus, and it would be great for anyone who's trying to manage Google Docs in a classroom type setting. It allows you to parcel out documents to different groups or individual students. You can freeze documents and do different kinds of management techniques with the documents. They have an overview video that you can watch to learn about it. And I think it's particularly useful for anybody in the Google Apps environment who wants to control more of the documents that their students are working with. So yeah. Check that out.
Cool. And then last but not least, Sally, the show would not be complete were it not for a share from our favorite social network.
Pinterest. Your favorite social network. You've been making more use of it. So you're going to become a fan before you know it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I actually pinned on the Wells Tech page this week infographic I came across from Internet Evangelism Day, and it's called The World of Mobile Phones. And it's not really evangelistic in its writing, but it does motivate those of us who want to share the gospel with the world to see the proliferation of mobile phones around the world. It's really stunning to look at the numbers. Number one country, China, has 951 million mobile phones. India just behind with 873. Compare that to us in the number three spot with only 327 million. Imagine how many more in those countries. So literally phones in everyone's hands, and it gets into some of the uses that different people in different countries have for the phones, and it's really stunning, and it's really an opportunity for us to make use of mobile technology to spread the word of God, and that's really why I pointed to it. So
ties in nicely with our topic of the seven best mobile computing tips. I noticed one item there, Sally, was 51% of Americans use their smartphone in bed.
Yep. It's the only time you have to slow down long enough to have a chance to actually look at
that's
it.
That's probably right. So that's it for community feedback.
That will do it for this week.
Okay, yes. Just a reminder to everybody, two things I want to remind you of. There are different ways to connect with us on the show. And if you just go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, not only will you see the beautiful show notes that Sally maintains each week, but you'll see many different ways to talk to us. Email, voicemail, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Digo, Google+, the listserv, those are all links there in the upper right for you to take advantage of. And we would really love for you to share your thoughts, questions, ideas with us. And that's one of my favorite parts of the show is just that listener feedback section or community feedback section. So please take advantage of that. And then last but not least, if you're interested in listening to the show or watching the show live, you can do that each week. Normally we record on Tuesday, and right on that show notes page, we have a little calendar that shows you when we do the recording, and we try and be faithful to that. So for instance, next week, if you'd like to tune in live and join us, that is going to be December 11th, Tuesday at 9 a.m. And in that show, we are going to be continuing our review of the book Presentation Zen. Those of you following along at home, we are on chapter 4. So Feel free to join us at 9 o'clock. That's Central Time next week as we review Chapter 4 presentations. And just go to the show notes page for all that good stuff. Sally, thanks again for all your hard work. And we're going to wrap up the new year. And I'm looking forward to our 7 Best show, which is going to run January 1st, where we get to run down all the picks that we made and kind of take a look and see, you know, what made a difference and, you know, maybe not so much. So,
yeah, I tend to think of things in terms of 7 now for some reason. So that'll fit well.
That's right. Let's close the show with some new music by a Wells featured artist. This is actually a very nice lady that I met while I was over in East Asia. I was in Tokyo and met, actually she was in Hong Kong with us as well, Kaori Igawa, who is a member of one of our churches in Tokyo. And she works on the translation team there. So she's working with multi-language publications, helping them translate our English material into Japanese. Very nice lady, but also very talented singer. So she shared with me when I was over there a CD with three original songs that she has recorded. And one of them is very fitting for Christmas, called The Angels' Christmas Carol. So let's listen to that song by Kaori Igawa. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.